comes in, they're sharing that with Google as well.
And Google is a publisher, right?
So Google is also my competitor in that instance as well.
So they are competing with the people you want to place your ads with. And so Google might say, although the best fit for your ad is one of our rivals, we'll take the ad.
Right.
Right. So you're reaching a worse audience as well, and you might be paying more for it.
And to boot, there's only one real competitor, and that's Facebook.
Facebook.
And they're price fixing with...
Yeah. I mean, this is just basically the referee pays the coaches of both teams. And the referee is getting incredibly wealthy, and the game is getting worse and worse. And the referee is like, the great forces of history have come to bear on the game to make it worse. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I own the wages of both teams.
So this is antitrust 101.
Yeah.
This is a situation where really competition would do the trick.
Sure. And Mike Lee in the United States, is an American senator, has introduced a bill, the America Act. But what's interesting is who's sponsoring it. Because it's co-sponsored by the likes of Elizabeth Warren and Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. So this is an issue that has a lot of legs behind
Antitrust
it.
Is heating up in the United States of America for reasons that you heard about and spoke about on Common's Monopoly series. We're a laggard, and we have a broken competition act in which all they need to demonstrate is that consolidation and monopolization presents efficiencies for them.
Right.
For them.
Yeah, Canada does not have a fit-for-purpose law. It also
The consumer, not for the public, not for publishers. However, the silver lining, I suppose, is that if antitrust is back in fashion in the States 5 to 10 years from now, that'll have an impact on us,
Well, also, if they break up ad tech in the U.S.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that we'll be.
Yeah. You'll be able to do, like, Google and Facebook have a lot of influence in Canada, don't get me wrong, but they're not going to be able, I think, to get a regulation passed that says Canada Land must do business with Google and Facebook and not with one of the other companies that pops up in the wake of them being broken up in the U.S.
All right, so this fixes things for news publishers who...
A little bit,
those who do advertising on their websites.
Right.
In that they're keeping more of that money.
Right.
So that all sounds swell. My only complaint with your enchidification process that you've described, because it perfectly describes what's happened to each of these platforms, but I've heard you lay it out here and elsewhere, and it's like, yeah, like that, that it conjures up an image that Zuckerberg was like rubbing his palms together and planning to enchidify Facebook. And I've never met a tech owner who doesn't think that they're actually doing something wonderful for the world.
Sure, this is just what happens when you're not disciplined by regulation.
It's just
or
what
competition.
Happens. It's the game. And the game the game is, at different junctures in the game, you look at the rules and you see what is my path to advantage based on these rules.
I mean, and to be clear, the investors are often like, how do we eliminate competition, right?
Yeah.
Like Peter Thiel says competition is for losers. The terrifying, enduring priapism of Warren Buffett whenever he talks about wide sustainable moats for his businesses to stop competition from entering the market.
No, I'm not trying to say that they're not evil. I'm just saying that they're not. They don't have that level of forethought.
No, I'm just saying, given the imperatives of the market and in the absence of regulation or competition, this is where you end up, right? Just like crabs always emerge evolutionarily, or we keep getting the eye, or wings develop on different animals. A platform, an intermediary, without regulation or competition, will figure out how to take more value from either side of the intermediated relationship until there's none left for anyone else.
So I'm trying to figure out my own path forward for this business, and also I think about it for other news businesses in Canada. And what I see is, like, I believe them. I believe Google and Facebook when they say, if this is the way it's going to be, we're just turning news off. Because Facebook has already done it, really.
Mm-hmm.
They've just choked it to the point where it's a drip so that they don't have the same bad look that Google got for that week when they turned it off completely.
Right. Unless you paid a boost.
But they've said this explicitly, that news has become a toxic part of people's experience. They don't want so much news on people's news feeds.
Right.
And I believe that it is certainly possible. I don't claim to know whether they're bluffing or not for a fact, but I think it's entirely possible that if they're forced to pay for news that they link to, they'll just stop linking to it, and that's Google and Facebook. And I'm looking at that and saying, maybe that's okay. Maybe we need to craft a new deal. Like, has it been so great having them in the picture? You know? And maybe we need to turn to the public and say, you can no longer count on these places to deliver you any news information. And if you want news information, you're going to have to go directly to people who provide it, and you're going to have to pay them for it. And we can mount a case for subscription revenue based on that. We need to refine our audience. We've had too many conversations in news about, like, well, nobody will pay for news because most people won't pay for news.
Right.
Nobody says, I'm not going to open up a vegan burger joint
because most people
like McDonald's.
Right.
Right. All you're concerned about is, oh, is there not a market for vegan hamburgers? In some places there is.
Sure.
Right. The actual paying news consumer has never been more than 10% of the adult population.
Right. Yeah.
We've lost track of there are people who will pay for news, but we've gotten so seduced by the bringing news to the masses, which is what social media did. All of a sudden, everybody's trading news back and forth and commenting on news. And I just wonder if purely by luck, I haven't stumbled, and those of us in podcast news haven't stumbled upon the formula that actually can work like tomorrow. And we have a product that is archaic. It's MP3 files delivered over RSS.
Mm-hmm.
This old tech.
A nobler weapon from a more civilized age.
That's right. And every few years, somebody comes along. I remember back at the CBC, they originally refused to invest in podcasts because they had just bought a proprietary video streaming service. And they said, well, look, we want all of our audio to go through this video player because then we can put ads on it and we can use all the data we get from our website. I'm like, yeah, but who wants to listen to a radio show on your shitty webpage? That failed,
yeah.
Right? And through the years, the New York Times just launched an audio app. CBC has their own audio app.
BBC
Every
Sounds.
Single audio publisher has tried to, like,
take... Spotify.
And even Spotify had to accept,
we're
going to let every single podcast onto our platform, because anybody who's tried to create, this is the best curated little Netflix of audio, has failed, because it's much like the web itself. It's resilient. The beauty of podcasting is that any product that you try to improve upon the openness of podcasting is going to be a more limited, it's going to offer people less. You know?
Yeah.
So we just by stupid luck, because audio was the last thing that big tech had its mind on.
Yeah.
I think we have something that works, that you have to get all four of those policy initiatives in place, not just in America, but around the world to get the results. Whereas those four policy initiatives kind of describe the way things were at the beginning of the internet, which is kind of where podcasting still is.
So you're right. But how many bullets can podcasting dodge, right? Because the open web is getting less and less open by the day.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, here's what I think. I think that you're putting a logical exclusive or where you want an and. Like, you're right. You've got a good thing going, and maybe you don't have to change it. But if you want to defend it over the long term, we need policies that are going to tip in favor of openness and tip the distribution towards the creative and news gathering workforce and away from intermediaries and capital,
mm-hmm.
right? That's how we get a fairer arrangement. My favorite theory of change comes from my arch nemesis, Milton Friedman. I like to quote him as often as I can because I like to think that as he looks up from the spit he's roasting on in hell and hears his words in my mouth, that he gets especially angry. And Milton Friedman, for people who don't know, he was the crank who basically started the Chicago School of Economics. He had this idea that we should reverse all the gains from the New Deal, from the social contract after World War II. And people would say to Milton, how are you going to convince people to do this? They like their kids going to school and not working in mills.
Weekends are nice.
Weekends are great. And Friedman would say, eventually there will come a crisis. And when that happens, people will reach for ideas that are lying around, and ideas will move from the fringe to the center very quickly. And the arrangement we have between big tech and the news is so inequitable, so unstable, so fragile, that it keeps lurching from crisis to crisis. And at each crisis, we say something must be done. But because the only ideas we have lying around are, how about a link tax? Every single time, we reach for the link tax, and we hope that we'll get a different outcome. I think that if we want better bargaining between the news and tech, that what we need to do is change the shape of the market. And as I keep noting, as I go through these four proposals, these are proposals that everybody should want, except for shareholders of tech firms, right? These are proposals that benefit all of us. And so when you say, well, how are we going to get change in Canada? Canada, you know, is nowhere near doing this. What I'm saying is hitch the news to the wagon of all the advertisers who want to stop getting ripped off by ad fraud, all the members of the public who are sick and tired of being spied on. And now you've got a force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, James Boyle, he says that before the term ecology was coined, some people cared about owls and some people cared about the ozone layer, but they were like, what does the destiny of charismatic nocturnal avians have to do with the gaseous composition of the upper atmosphere? They didn't have a movement. They had issues, right? The term ecology took 1,000 issues and made a movement out of them. We have an opportunity to fight for a better digital ecology. And if we can socialize these ideas, have them lying around, get on Canada land and spend an hour talking about them, then these ideas might be the things we reach for the next time we reach a crisis and we say something must be done.
Corey, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is your Canada Land. You can email me. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. We're on Twitter at Canada Land, our website, canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione, our audio editor and technical producer. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Jan Wong, author and journalist. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Jesse?
I'm doing good. Today on the show, Olivia Chow, pre-election, is being crowned mayor of Toronto by the press, and I'm just finding that confusing. Welcome back to Shortcuts, Jan, where we talk shit about the news.
Thanks. Glad to be here again.
Can we talk about the mayoral election in Toronto here?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's so exciting.
All around the country, people are like, oh, here goes the Toronto-centric. But they're not going to turn it off, are they? They're not going to turn off.
No, they got to listen.
They hate us for talking about ourselves, but they can't turn away from it either.
We're like a car crash. No, this is exciting. It's not the same old, same old. This is going to be it's really fun race.
I just like was a little bit checked out of it and then kind of came back into focus when I started to read this like chorus of polling and articles. Basically, it's a fait accompli. Olivia Chow is the undisputed frontrunner. I'm like, what?
Okay. Well, I have to tell you, I'm supporting Olivia Chow. And okay. I can say this, and this is an interesting journalism thing. I couldn't ever say anything for years and years and years if I'm actively reporting, but I'm not. And I'm so excited because I can actually say I'm supporting her. So you think this is a media kind of chorus? I was watching it, and she didn't get much attention until she sort of burst ahead in the polls.
That's it. I was kind of feeling like one of those blasts from the past things where I'm like, she did not seem like a strong candidate. Last time I heard her in a debate, I'm like, wow. I was expecting a lot more of a polished political performance from somebody who's been in the game as long as mm-hmm. her. And then she got trounced, and I thought, I guess that's it for her.
You're talking about previous race, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I guess if she wants to run again. But there were like, you know, other people with similar politics who seemed a lot fresher. So
exactly.
I was just not expecting to see her name at the top of the polls.
Yeah, me too. I didn't know. I mean, I know her, but I'm not close. And when she threw her name in the hat, I thought, oh. And then when this other guy, Gil Penalosa, who was this maverick character mm-hmm. in the previous election, he's not a politician, but he's a city planner and he's done all kinds of things. When he threw his support to her, I started sitting up and paying attention. And then I started paying more attention to Olivia Chow. And I went, I think I'm going to support her because I like what she's saying. Also, you know, there's over 100 candidates running for Toronto mayor. I'm surprised you didn't run, Jesse. You and I could have each run, and then, I don't know, we could have written about it.
If this guy Brad Bradford can run, then I maybe could have run. I want to tell you, this is a little digression here.
Yeah, I got to digress, too. You go first.
All right. So Brad Bradford, I don't know, he's like, what, number 5 or 6 in the poll? Like,
yeah.
Not a fringe candidate. He's not going to win. But he was out there, and he was making the case about the housing crisis. And he had, they always have these anecdotes.
I know. His friend Paul.
His friend Paul.
Best friend.
Well, it didn't start off that way. It started off as he knows that there's this guy. There's this guy. Paul. And Paul's an example of how bad the situation is. Paul's out there and he's got to spend $1,000 for some basement apartment. He can't afford to live anywhere else. Can't even afford to move. And then it comes out earlier this week that Paul is his childhood friend and the basement in which Paul is living is Brad Bradford's basement. Brad is his landlord.
I know, but I got a Brad Bradford story.
All right.
So when I was working undercover for a series on minimum wage and I was a maid and I had to find an apartment. And
you went all in on that one, huh?
Nobody does this kind of stuff anymore. And one of the people I called, one of the people whose ad I answered was Brad Bradford.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. And it was, I think, for a basement apartment because I had to get something super cheap because I was working as a maid and everything even then, I don't know, this is 15 years ago, I don't remember when. It was really expensive. And I remember that I went to see it and it was so crappy I didn't want it.
Wow.
So that's my memory. It's got to be the same guy. It has to be the same guy.
If made mayor, predatory landlords, such as myself.
If he's made mayor, I'm going to rent his basement apartment just to hang out and watch him.
That's just amazing.
Okay, let's get back to Olivia Chow.
Okay.
So this is what I think. This is why it's so delicious. And this is why people who are not in Toronto can vicariously enjoy this with us. Because John Tory in the previous election, which was like last year, he swept to power with a tiny majority of a splinter of voters because no one bothered to vote. It was so boring. And then like 10 minutes later, Doug Ford gave him superpowers as a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And superpowers in terms of real estate developers, and we can do all this, and you can fire people, and you don't need a majority of the votes on city council to pass stuff. Important stuff. You only need a third. So it was shocking, right? We found this out after this so-called mini sweep. But then another 10 minutes later, John Tory drops his pants in his office and has an affair with one of his staffers, which in the Me Too era is not on. It's fine if he wants to, you know, have it with his neighbor like Mike Harris did years ago because she didn't work for him in his office. So all of this has blown up.
Is that known or is this like the latest one can possibly drop a bombshell about Mike Harris? Like, is this finally coming out now?
Oh, no. I did the story years ago and it came out.
Okay.
And no. We reported it. We've got the Mike Harris scoop.
Okay.
You're too young. So now we have as the front runner a woman actually who looks like me. Finally, you know, after decades of white people, it's just really fun. And she's left, whereas Tory was right. So hold on.
The National Post published a report on Monday that Olivia Chow was meeting with organizations that support Beijing's positions in Canada.
Okay, that's really interesting because she's got some lefty supporters really worried.
Mm-hmm.
So she drops in to this lunch and she says, hi, and I listened to the tape of her speech. And she said, hi, guys, let me tell you about the Chinese Exclusion Act. And she's not speaking in Chinese because she doesn't actually speak Mandarin. She speaks Cantonese. And they speak Mandarin because they're from the mainland. So mm-hmm. She needs an interpreter. She's speaking in English. They're translating. Yeah, when that National Post story came out, I was like, why are you even reporting this? Politicians go all the time to Chinese banquets and hope they get the vote. She's running for mayor of all Toronto. Of course she's going to make campaign pit stops. And I just said, hashtag racism, because I really think it's a double standard. If you ask her about Chinese interference, and we know it's happening, you got to ask everybody. You got to ask all the candidates. Ask Brad Bradford, you know, what's happening with him. So
I agree. And it's like this, we can only hold one idea at a time. Like, can we actually get serious about China and about the government? Obviously, there's a problem in our democracy without getting into some peril situation where like Asian candidates are like worthy of news coverage if they like buy chili crisp in the grocery store.
Exactly. And they gave her a big-ass ugly boss, as if this is like equivalent to getting a vacation on a super yacht and island hopping. It's like,
I like the relevance of the ugliness. It's like not a nice vase.
And she's the last person that would be influenced by Chinese interference. Why are they inviting her? Because she's the front runner. Duh. They've got to now deal with her if she wins. So I just think there's so many interesting angles to this mayoral race. And I just think it's going to be so interesting to watch. I mean, it's still a month out, right? It's also fun to watch candidates like, you know, the former police chief.
It's nice that Doug Ford can't just install Mark Saunders, like, or at least that's seeming difficult.
That's what he's trying to do. And it's not working. And after all these years of the Fords sort of running our lives and stomping on us, it's so nice to see this powerlessness as people actually wake up and go, wait, Olivia Chow's running? What's she saying? Oh, that sounds good.
All right, I'm going to keep an open mind. I was not impressed last time I saw her.
Oh, you have to watch the debates. There's debates.
All right.
And they're all attacking her, which is really hilarious, because then she gets 50% of all the talking time.
I have a question for you, Olivia.
Well, my question is to Olivia.
All right, I'm plugging in. I'm going to check this out. Jan, we're going to duly note some stories that people should be paying more attention to. What do you have for us?
Well, it's winding down to the end of Asian Heritage Month. And every year, I feel quite ambivalent about this. I feel like, how come I just get a month and all you guys get the whole year? But I also feel like, can I get a discount at Walmart this month? Or how about free on-street parking? Like, it seems so empty. And, you know, all this cultural stuff. Now, I understand it's serious because things happen. Bad stuff happened. Like, this is the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Exclusion Act passed in 1923 when they slammed the door shut on Chinese. And, of course, Japanese Canadians were interned during World War II, and this ship full of people, Sikhs and Muslims from India, were turned away from Vancouver after keeping them floating in the harbor for several months without giving them enough food and water. So I understand why, but I feel like Asian Heritage Month is all about like happy dancing and, you know, we'll get authors to talk. So I just feel very strange about it. I don't know what to do with this. It's like some well-meaning white person decided to give me a month, and I don't know what to do with it.
Well, let me tell you what to do with it. Duly noted. I want to duly note just a quick update to our story last week, which went into some detail about how the conservative leader was forming a massive campaign against the Safe Supply or Safer Supply program, one of the measures to try to deal with the opioid epidemic. And he was mounting this massive campaign to try to end it on the basis of a extremely flawed piece of reporting in the National Post. And I wanted to update a couple points of that. One is that Adam Szivo, the author of that piece, though he did not respond to the criticism, which was widely shared, I did note that as he continues to write about this new opioid epidemic that he described, the Safer Supply hydromorphone drugs are becoming the new opioid epidemic, he softened his language. So whereas he wrote with certainty in the 11,000 word piece that there is this new, this it's as big as OxyContin, it's a flood, it's a geyser, he's now using language like, it appears to be a new crisis. So I guess that's the level of, that's the corrections policy.
That's the correction, right?
But more importantly, I was kind of speculating like, wow, we actually might get policy that is based on this very flawed National Post reporting. And sure enough, last week, Pierre Poilievre went from a campaign to a motion calling on the Liberal government to halt all programs providing non-toxic drugs to those suffering with addictions and redirecting funding to treatment services, essentially rehab and detox. Crime, chaos, drugs and disorder rage in our streets.
Wow,
et cetera, et cetera.
Duly noted.
Jan Wong, that is Shortcuts. Thank you.
It's so much fun always.
We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. I can be emailed, Jesse @CanadaLand.com. I read them all. Jen, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm like the last person still there. I'm at Writer Wong.
I'm still on Twitter, too. This episode is produced by Aviva Lessard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our theme music is by So-Called, syndication by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.
Okay. Hold me back with kid gloves. Tell it like you once was. Tell me what's the point of showing up if nothing's for us. Maybe we're alone. Maybe nothing really matters. And maybe I'm an asshole with the flair for the drink. Oh, God.